To get your name on the start?
No, no.
Don't mention his name.
No. Okay, we'll get a bit about where and when you were born, your early life, your education, dates of this.
Well, I was born in London, England, 1902. Came to Canada in 1910. Lived in Nieuport, Manitoba.
What was your father's occupation?
He was a cook.
And do you remember the name of the boat you came over on coming in?
Toonism.
And whereabouts did you land in Quebec?
Halifax.
Halifax. And I guess you came to Winnipeg or to Manitoba by train, did you?
Well, we left Halifax by train to Winnipeg, then from Winnipeg to Nieuport.
What was the train trip like?
Oh, well, in them days, a little different than now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're ready to eat on the train, make your own meals, have these old-fashioned stoves or wooden coaches. They'd stop about every 50, 60 mile, give you a chance to get out and buy food and stuff like that.
Were there many immigrants traveling on the train?
Oh, yes. Oh, the boat load of them, I guess. I couldn't say how many, but there was lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they were mostly off from Ireland, Scotland, and England.
Life in Nieuport.
Well, we were farming in Nieuport.
What type of farming?
A grain farm.
And did you go to school?
Country school. And then later on I went to town school, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what grade did you attain?
Grade 8.
Okay. Were you working before the war broke out?
In the Second War?
Yeah.
Yes, I was just doing about 3 days a week, that's about all. But that's what the Depression was on them days, that is, you'd heard about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you in the First World War at all?
No.
No? No.
Not the first.
Okay. Now, we'll get a bit about your military background from the time the war broke out in September.
Well, I was in the militia when the war broke out.
Mm-hmm.
I was a Winnipeg Rifles at the time. I put 5 years in with them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Winnipeg Rifles didn't mobilize in 1939. They mobilized in 40, but I didn't want to wait that long. So I joined the Queen's Own Cameron Highlanders. And then from there, I transferred to the Grenadiers. Because from the Grenadiers, we went to Jamaica and back from there, as you were saying,
mm-hmm.
Hong Kong.
Now, before you went to Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
What type of training was done in Winnipeg and where was it done?
Fort Osborne Barracks. The mm-hmm. Princess Pats moved out. They went with the 1st Division to England and we moved in and took the barracks over.
Mm-hmm.
But we done training on the Parade Square and all that stuff, you know.
Was the machine gun training and everything?
Oh, yeah.
What type of machine
gun? Lewis and Vicker, that was the old First War gun, but then that's what we took to Hong Kong. But fellows that fought in Europe had this new gun called the Czechoslovakia, maybe. I can't think of it now. But anyway, we didn't have it. Well, then you had rifle training, you done guard duty, you know. You got your turn in the kitchen washing dishes and everything else. So then we stayed in Fort Osborne there for a while. And then they picked what they called an advance party, you see. They always go ahead to make plans with the regiment, you see. And some of them were there 16 months, some never got any further. They got back to Winnipeg and I guess there was more than half of the regiment that they weren't fit to go, so they had to get reinforcements here, you see, when we went to Jamaica. But we, when we came back, we were in the Robertson building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess you know where that is.
Yeah. Now, going to Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
Which regiment, or which company were you in?
A battalion headquarters.
Oh, okay. And what rank?
Private.
Okay. Now, going to Jamaica, can you tell me a bit about the... your trip down to Jamaica, how you went?
Yes, we went down to Montreal and caught the boat there, you see. And then they went across the Caribbean Sea, yes. And I was in Jamaica, I think a little better than 12 months. And then a bunch of us came, they shipped a bunch of us back to Winnipeg. Well, I went to Fort Osborne Barracks, and up there I went as a battler. And I waited there till the regiment come back to the Robertson Building, and I joined them there. And that's when we left for Hong Kong.
What was the life like in Jamaica?
Well, it's a hot place to begin with. You put a shirt on, you could wring it out in 10 minutes. And the thing was trying to keep cool. But what they used to do there, as far as the regiment went, they'd get up early in the morning and go and pray for about an hour, you see, before it got too hot. Then they were, well, they were finished for the day. It was too hot to do much training now. And then their duties were, there was an internment camp there, you know, prisoners of war, internees. That's what they used to do, most on the guard duty. Well, when we come back here, they give us, when the battalion come back, they give us a 10 days furlough. But then we're only away for 24 hours, and they called us all back because they got orders from Ottawa for us to move out. But no one knew where we were going. But our first stop from Victoria to Hong Kong was Honolulu. And that's where I found out where we were going.
How did you find out?
Well, there was a big colored boy up on the deck, and he was putting oil in this, on the boat, in this tunnel. And I stuck my head out the porthole, and I says to him, "What kind of a place is this?" He said, "It's a good place before the white man ever come here." But he said, "Once you get up to Hong Kong," he says, "and get amongst those chinks," he said, "you really have a good time." He said, "Everything's cheap down there," which it was. Well, you know, the word got around, and then everybody, well then, when we pulled out of there, the colonel of the regiment got up one morning, and we were having breakfast, and he told us where we were going.
This would be Sutcliffe,
wasn't it? Yeah, Sutcliffe, yeah. See, Colonel K was the colonel in 39, but they called him to Ottawa. He went on the general staff. Well, of course, Sutcliffe, he died in Hong Kong, you see. And then this fellow Twist, acting Colonel Twist, he took it over, you see. But then away, when we left Honolulu, our next stop was the Philippine Island, Manila. So we stayed there for about 24 hours, but nobody was allowed off the boat. And from there, we went, you see, you leave the Pacific to into the China Sea, and right down to Hong Kong, but we didn't dock in Hong Kong, we docked in Kowloon, that's the mainland of China. See, Hong Kong is just an island that's out in the China Sea. And they took us across there by ferry, is it? But our barracks for Shamsi Po, that's on the on China coast. Yeah, that's in Kowloon, you see. Well, when I got down there, I worked in the kitchen, a bunch of us, and there wasn't much to do. You were more or less the boss, the chinks, the Chinese, and all the work, you see. And so they sent me up into the hills with attached me to A Company, you see. They were going up on maneuvers, this was Hong Kong. So I left on the Sunday night, and boy, on the Monday morning, that's when the Japs hit us. They came in with planes, that'd be the 8th of December. Well, at the time they hit the Philippines and all them ways, you know, Pearl Harbor. And then, of course, it was hell popping there for about 18 days, I'll tell you. No sleep, nothing to eat. Everywhere you went, you can see nothing but Japs. Well, it was 5 battalions against 7 divisions, so you can tell what a chance we had. And their divisions are bigger than ours, you see.
Was there much training done after your arrival, between the time of the arrival and the actual beginning of the fight?
No, because you see, the time they got set up there and everything, they didn't have any time before the thing started, you see. Mm-hmm. And as you know, it lasted from the 8th to we lasted 18 days, you see. Well, the day we folded up, it was Christmas Day. I got captured at 4 o'clock.
What part of Hong Kong?
A place called Little Hong Kong, between Brick Hill and Aberdeen. And the fellow that got captured with me, I saw his death in the paper here the other day. He just died the other day.
What was his name?
Dimes.
Oh, yeah.
Bert Dimes.
Yeah.
Well, him and I got captured together. We were on a machine gun in the house. And we had guards outside. But these Japs, they sneaked up on them and knifed them, you see. And of course, we didn't know what was going on, and we were upstairs with this gun out the window. And the next thing night, and we know, they put a bunch of these trench mortars up there. And that was it. Well, we come out this house with our hands up. I got hit on top of the head with the butt of a rifle as soon as I stepped out the door. Took my wristwatch and ring, tied me up with rope. And out on the main road, they had about 2,000 of these guys all tied up. Canadians, British, Indian troops, everybody. And they tied you up by the, you see this rope behind your back, they'd hook it up to a big long barbed wire that everybody was chained up to. Well, it's too bad if you couldn't walk, because they just pull you to one side and bail at you. And anyway, they got us down to this place called Deepwater Bay, and they took most of us to a camp called Argyle. And I was in there 6 weeks. And then they decided they'd put us all together. The rest of the boys went to Champ Depot, that was our old barrack, you see.
Mm-hmm. What was this Argyle camp like?
Well, it was mostly all Indian troops, Punjab that was captured, they were all in there. There was very few white troops in there. A few Quebec rifles. There wouldn't be any more than 20 of us anyway from both regiments in there, you see, but it was a tough joint. Yeah, very little to eat once a day. They'd give you a bowl of rice, fish head or something like that. Well, then when we got to Champs-Élysées, it wasn't too bad in there for a while. Food was no good, but you had no choice, you know what I mean. But then they started picking drafts to go to Japan to work, you see, coal mines, dockyards. But they never took me. I guess I was no good to them. I was too old, I guess. But they took most of the young fellows there, see. But I stayed in Hong Kong for 4 years. Well, when the war ended, I weighed about 70 pounds. I couldn't get up off the floor. Not a month, none of us had ever got out of there. But one morning we got up and we saw no Japs around the fence, no working parties. Well, the guys figured, you know, there's something wrong. So about a half an hour after, these American bombers come over and they drop these patents. I had a bunch of them, I guess I give them away. I got any left. There was an English one side and a Chinese on the other side, you see, telling us the war had ended, you see. Well, then we were there about 2 weeks, and then a British convoy came in there. Boats, you know, submarines. And I'll never forget, as long as I live, they took us down to these boats, and this fella says, you go in any boat you like, and have all the food you want. And me, like a damn fool, I got on this submarine. So they had a little English, little liney guy there. Oh, he was not big, like a midget. And he was making this plum duff, I don't know if you've heard of that. Roll it up in a cloth and they boil it. Jesus, heavy in this. Well, I got one piece of that into me, and boy, you talk about indigestion. I know they're going to die. But you know, the most of the boys couldn't eat because their stomach had all flunk up. Well, anyway, we stayed there for about 2 weeks waiting for a boat to come and fetch us. And then finally a boat did come in, the Empress of Britain. And she took us as far, and the women and kids, they all got on this boat from Stanley Prison. That's where their barracks were, you see.
These were the
interns.
Civilians, were they?
Well, soldiers, wives, and kids that never got out of there, you see. Well, this Stanley Prison, you see, that what the Japs done, they took these prisoners, civilian prisoners in there, I don't know where the devil they went, and they used it as for these women and kids to be stationed in, you see. Well, anyway, they were all on the same boat as us. Well, some of them, of course, their husband was alive. Some of them, their husbands had died, you see. But anyway, they took us as far as the Philippines, and then they went down to the Indian Ocean that way back to England. But us fellows, we stayed at the Philippines until we could get a boat, you see. Well, the Americans were very good to us from there. They fed us and clothed us. And then I got on a boat called the Admiral Hughes. Oh, beautiful boat. Luxury liner, really what it was. They had swimming pools, golf course, picture shows, everything on that thing. Yeah. Yeah, a wonderful trip back. Well, it took us 28 days to go to Hong Kong. And coming back, we made it in 14 days. So a little difference there. Didn't see so much water.
Whereabouts did you land when you came back? In San Francisco, or did you go away?
No, that's where we were. That was where we were supposed to go. Mm-hmm. But On the way back, they said on the loudspeaker that there was Americans and maneuvers going on there at the San Francisco Navy. So they told us to take Victoria. So we come to Victoria. Well, we went on the camp there. I was there for another 2 weeks. Then after that, you were on your own. They'd give you a transportation and your pay, and you could go on any train you want back to Winnipeg, you see. I was about the last bunch. We were the last bunch that ever got back here.
Let's go back to Sham Shapoe.
Yeah.
Now, while you were... Well, after the surrender and you were taken prisoner, did the Japanese put you to work while you were in the...
Oh, definitely, definitely. War? Cleaning up, yeah.
Did you ever go outside the camp?
Oh, yes, on working parties.
And whereabouts did you go?
They took us down to a place called Kai Tak. That's their airport. If you went there today, that's where you'd land. And in around there, in a place called Deepwater Bay, Repulse Bay, there's lots of dead around there. So it didn't matter who you were, Jap, you could be anything. They'd throw you all in the pile. Well, of course, you know, they don't believe in burying. They create, you see, so they just put a match, gas, and burn everybody up. And we were on that job till that was cleaned up for about 3 weeks. Then we went to work at the Sham Shapoe, this Kai Tak Airport. Well, it was a very small landing field in there, the British used it. But there was big mountains all around. So that was our job, to take these mountains down. Well, what a job. Had this light railroad cars in there and track, you know, but no engines. You were the engine. You done the pushing and pulling. And the Japs following you all the time with that old fixed bayonet, you know. Oh, yeah. It was tough.
How long did you work at the airport?
I was on there about a year and a half. Then my eyes went on me. I couldn't see. I got thin. I got malaria.
What were the sicknesses like in the camp at this time? Was there quite a bit of it, and various diseases?
Oh, yes, it started to come. Then diphtheria hit that camp in 43, and boy, they died like flies. And I laid on the floor, that concrete floor, there was two guys there. I was in the center. And the fellow on the outside of me, he had he's what they call a carrier. And the other fellow had the dip. And I laid between them, I had nothing to do. So this old Jap doctor come in there, he spoke English. And he says, give them two fellows a needle, but the old fellow there, don't bother with him, not with me. And, I had red hair when I went in there. Geez, it turned gray in about 6 months, I guess. I looked older than really what I was. Well, I never got nothing, but these two guys died and I lived. A miracle, I could never figure that one out.
Was there quite a bit of medicine in the camp?
There was, but they wouldn't give it to us.
What about the interpreter in the camp? Do you recall his name? Tell me a bit about
him? We had a British interpreter from the Middlesex with us. And then, of course, there was Jap interpreters too, you see. And, of course, most of our Japanese officers could speak English anyway. Biggest part of them, yeah. The camp commandant, he couldn't talk English.
After you finished working on the airport, you said you worked there for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Then you took sick, did you?
Yeah.
What happened between that time and the end of the war?
I stayed right in this old hut with the roof all knocked off. And we had a bit of tin up there for the windows, to cover the windows up. And then, of course, you know, that's quite a country for typhoons, too, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I seen some wicked ones there. Oh, yes, and then... In 44, the Americans took the Philippines back. Mm-hmm. Well, once they took that place back, these American B-29 bombers, brother, they used to come over there, and you talk about bomb. I remember the 4th of July. They come over there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they bombed us till 6 o'clock at night. See, what they were after, you see, they watched these Japanese ships' convoys, you know what a convoy is. Well, they'd be loading up cars and... these streetcar tracks, see, anything can make ammunition, I see. Put it on these boats and take it to Japan. Well, this observation plane would come over, you see, in the night and take pictures of this. But if they spotted something like a convoy and they're loading up, then the bombers would come in the next day, you see. That's what they were after. But one time there was a pickle factory across from this camp we were at. It had been a pickle factory, but the Japs had something in there. The Americans were tipped off and they were after that place. Well, they come in there this morning about 6 o'clock, and brother, they hit this place, And this old hut we were in, you know. The walls come in and they went back out again. Concussion, you see, of these big bombs, you know. What they call blockbusters. Well, after they dropped a couple of them, brother, you could look downstairs, look down there, if you fell in, take about five guys to get you out. Bricks that were baked to the ground. There's a little fellow there I never laughed so much in my life. He's called me Billy Kaninsky. I don't know if you met him or not. Polish fellow. Well, one night we made a deal with one of these Japs, you know. We sold him a sweater. So he brought us in some coffee and some brown sugar and a little milk powder, you know. Gee, that was something good, see. So we're going out, but you got to get far enough away from the gang because Jesus there ever found out he had that, you'd never get nothing. So we were going down this road there to make this fire, and this we had a bare feet, you know. And this little Billy Kaninsky kicked one of these bricks and he broke four toes. He was baked right to the ground. Yeah. Used to have a little fun there once in a while too, you know, amongst ourselves.
How did the Japanese treat their own men?
Well, of course, that's pretty hard to tell. You see, the Japs, it's hard to explain. Now, our army's different, you know. But the way the Japs work, you see, they have what they call combat troops, you know what I mean? All young fellas. If you're over 20, you wouldn't get in that house. They do the fighting. They're guerrillas. And boy, they're guerrillas, are they? More like lions, you see. Well, they go into a place first, like Hong Kong, to take it, see. Well, when they take that place, they're in there for 24 hours. Now, according to their law, military law, they're allowed to shoot, rape, steal, do anything. Well, all right, when that 24 hours is up, they pull them out, and they put an army of occupation in. Now, they're older men that's not fit to fight, you know what I mean, but good enough for guard duties. And that's the way they work it out. Well, then the Japs got so short of men, they even took them out. And they brought a bunch of troops in there, I don't know where, really, somewhere around Formosa where they come from. But they're only half Jap and half Chink. But they hate the Japs, because the Japs conquered their place for country for so many years, see. And they didn't give a damn about the Jap at all. They done all the guard duty, but they were good guys to get along with, though, see. They're more like a bunch of racketeers. They're always wanting to know if you got something to sell. And they had the cigarettes, you see. You had the goods. They're a pretty good bunch of fellows. We got along good with them. But that was damn near the last year of the war when they came in there, see.
What about Red Cross parcels? Did you receive any at all while you were
in the war? Yeah, I got two of them. And they both had a bayonet run to them. And the canned goods was all rotten, you see. The air got in there. There wasn't very much in there. I haven't got out of it. But some fellows done all right. Some fellows didn't get food. They got blankets and the tobacco and stuff like that. But they're all pretty good. They'd all share up, you know, dub in together. But when the war was over, they found buildings there as big as Eaton's, loaded with all this stuff. Never give it to them. These Jap guards would go in there and steal half it and take it downtown and sell it to the Chinese population. And what they didn't steal, they'd make sure it was no good to anybody else. Yeah.
Before I guess it would be after the battle was over. Did you find out that there was Japanese officers that were under disguise?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. This mess room at Camp Depot, where I said I worked in the kitchen, there's the one fellow out there, and I couldn't tell a Jap from a Chink anyway. But he was dressed like a Chink, see? And he had a little stand there, and he sold shoelaces and razor blades, a fancy ring and all this. And he talked English. And one day there, he had a belt. And it had a funny hitch on it. I never saw a belt like this before, so I asked him, I forget what it was, about a dollar something in China and Chinese money. And I bought it off him. And after the war was over, I met this fellow. Well, I thought I recognized him. I wasn't sure. But geez, he recognized me. He come over to me, he said, "You still got that belt I sold you?" That was the only one I know of. Now, there could have been a lot more of that around, you see, which I guess there were.
What type of a disguise did he use?
Well, he was just dressed like a Chinaman. You know, he wore the same clothes as they wear. I don't think I could have told him. Maybe a Chink could take him out. Because when the war ended, and this is what happened in Hong Kong, they threw all their arms in a pile and they took off downtown. And they got dressed up, these officers met as Chinese. But when the British was looking for him, they'd never find him. But the Chinks spotted them right away. They could tell them just to look at him. Oh, they brought them all back in there and they put them in the same camp we come out of. Yeah.
The daily routine in the camp, what time did you get up in the morning?
You got up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the first thing you done, you went out and lined up on the parade square for a roll call. And they check you, it's easy if everybody's there. Well, I don't know what year that was, 50. I guess it'd be 43. We had three fellas escape from there. Well, they didn't get far, but anyway. The big typhoon come up this night, and we were stationed on the island of this North Point camp at that time. Well, they had it all planned up with some Chinamen in these sampans, you know, to get them from the island to the mainland. And I believe, as far as I know, they got across all right. But when they started down this road, they were traveling by night, and these Japs were guarding this highway. They had a bunch of barbed wire hanging across this road, see, and a bunch of cans. Of course, it was dark, and these guys run into it. Well, the minute these Japs, you know, heard the noise, they threw these big floodlights on them there, and, well, they shot the three of them.
Did they belong to the Grenadiers?
Grenadiers, they're all Grenadiers. Yeah. And one fellow, a sergeant, I forget his name, but he worked for Stovall's here before he joined up.
Do you recall any of their other names?
I know their face, you know what I mean? But I don't know, I'm not much good on names. A lot of them fellows I didn't know much anyway. A lot of them were ring unfortunates to us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, after you got up in the morning, you went to the parade square?
Yeah, and you had your name called, and then the working parties would line up in the way they'd go to work. They never got nothing to eat till 12 o'clock. And as I say, they'd give you a little can of rice and a fish head or some weeds or something like that all boiled up, you know, and salt and everything. While most of the fellas were starving to death, you know. Well, us fellas that couldn't work, we'd go back to the huts, you know, bum around in there all day. The Japs never bothered us, though. Well, 12 o'clock, we'd get something to eat. Well, about 9 o'clock at night, they'd bring this working party in. He really worked them out, did he? And then they'd get something to eat, and that was it. And that's the way it was every day. They didn't stop you. They fixed an old building up now. If they never brought it into your religion. If you were Catholic, you had a hut to go to, and if I was a Protestant, I was just the same. They were all right that way. There's lots of other ways. Well, they didn't believe in international law anyway, because they didn't belong to the Geneva Conference at that time, you see. Their big idea was to win the war.
Was there many deaths in the camp?
Oh, every day somebody went.
And how did they bury them? Did they cremate them?
No.
Or did they bury them?
No, they just dig a hole and wrap them up with some brown paper and throw them in. And one dip ferry hit there, well, they couldn't dig holes fast enough. They used to dig these trenches, you know, and just throw them all in. Yeah, they'd get more or less like a military funeral. They'd blow the last pulse, you know.
Did they have their own priest performing duties at the funeral, or was it all strictly just the Canadian?
No, it would just be about six men in the Japanese firing party there, you know, and a bugler. That's all there was to it. There was no service or nothing. No. And, of course, if one guy died, or, you know, the average guy, they'd just dig a hole anyway. You know, sometimes I often think, because people don't know, well, you know, today we got a a lovely cemetery there in Hong Kong. You ever see the picture of that place? But who's in there? There's nobody in there. Of course, people don't know that. And they wouldn't know where half those guys would. In 1943, they come in around the camp there and were short of wood. Now this Jap officer, he come over and he said, "Well, you guys ain't that sick. Get on the truck and we'll go up and find some wood." Now this was on the island. Now, we went down a few deep ravines and we've come across six skeletons laying there. And we took their identification. They were Canadian, B Company. I couldn't tell you their name. But there's fellows laid there never was found. But if they knew who they were once they got that identification.
What about, were there any times during the imprisonment, there was any animals around the camp and the prisoners caught them and ate them, like rats?
Well, yeah,
and
we
dogs
had, well, no, we had monkeys in there and dogs. Mm-hmm. I used to have a little fellow there, he used to sit at the foot of the old floor there with me, I'd feed him rice. And, one Christmas there, when I knew they were going to lose the war in 44, they took a bunch of our fellows out and they shot four pigs on the Chinese farm. They shot the chink too that owned them. He come out raising hell, he wasn't going to get these pigs. Well, had you been one, I'd lose the war in 44. They took a bunch of our fellows out and they shot four pigs on the Chinese farm. They shot the chink too that owned them. He come out raising hell, he wasn't going to get these pigs. Well, the Jap didn't want to argue with him, so they give him the business. And they brought these pigs in, and they put it in a great big boiler, you know. And they threw tomatoes and rice, and oh, geez, quite a feast. I got a little piece of pork about that big out of that deal. That's not, well, I had to cut it that way, you know, there's so many of us, you know. All these women and kids. The only day I ever got what you call it, what I thought was something good.
Was there any other times that
but this monkey
did any
meat,
anything?
No, and I was going to tell you about this monkey. He got on some guy's shoulder, and this guy was going down with two pails to get the rations for the boys in the hut. This bloody monkey was hungry. He dived right into this pot, this boy, the thing what was cooking it all. Huh? They just bought him out, wiped him down. Hell out of here. They eat just the same. Oh, I have heard of fellas cooking snakes. Now, I never seen this. But I heard they caught them on the working parties. And well, there's something like our garters from snakes. They're not poisonous or nothing. Not about that long. Something I damn near got bit with one time was a scorpion. You've seen them, haven't you? Scared everywhere we found them. Well, when they bite you, they, as other fellas bit with them, they're not poisonous, but they make you dopey, you know, for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, you know. I woke up one morning, this little fellow was pretty close to me. Well, as I say, there were dogs in there too, but I never heard of anybody, you know, eating them or killing them or anything like that. There were people, pets, you see, that were there before the war, and they all come into the camp. And now there was a good dog, or these Chinese cats, you know, they're only got a little short tail like that. They're a wonderful cat, they're gray. Well, the Japs took most of them back to Japan with them. They took all the race horses, all the cattle, anything that wasn't nailed down, boy, they took it.
What about recreation and entertainment? Was there any in the camp?
Well, you could play football if you could be able to get out there. They'd give you a football. And then once in a while, they'd let you put a concert on. We had a guy, you remember, maybe in your, you heard people talking the first war, they had this outfit called the Dumbbells. They were veterans, you know, had a big meeting. Well, they, this is something what they were trying to do over there. They had fellows dressed as women, personally, you know. That was all right.
Like what? A bit about the shows that
they put on. Well, this, you see, they left the... We had a fellow there from, I forget what outfit, he Red Cross, I guess he was. He was a correspondent, he wasn't a soldier. He looked after all this. He, well, he'd go to the Jap camp, come with him, ask him if he could put a concert on. Well, he didn't go too often, the Jap would say, okay. Well, then you made it, the plays and all that up, you know, in your way, or whatever song you wanted to sing. They'd lend you a piano, and some of our guys would you know, was in the band. The Japanese band would lend them their instruments. Well, so they were all right in some way. But then you see, we had four or five different camp commanders, you see. Well, the first guy we had, he was no damn good at all. And of course, we never had no lights or nothing but the saw lights. So maybe some nights the concert would last longer, but you had no lights, so they had to cut it off.
Did they make any, they make up a stage with the background?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was all fixed up, yeah.
Did the men do this themselves?
Oh, yeah, they're our own boys, yeah, get together. Yeah. We had a fellow named Archie McKinney, McKinley. He died in Dear Lodge about a year ago. He was a sergeant, quartermaster sergeant. He used to look after all that kind of work, you know.
Was there any other escape attempts from the camp?
No, there were only three fellows that ever tried to get out. And of course, when they shot these guys, that put a little fear in the rest of them, so nobody ever tried it. Well, you didn't have a chance. Where are you going to go? Where in the world are you going to go? You can't go nowhere. Once you get on that mainland, the Chinks, the Japs, they had that place right from there to Burma. So you couldn't go nowhere. You'd get caught for sure. Then, of course, our two Canadian nurses, you know, we took there, one from Winnipeg and one from Toronto. But see, they left them go in 42, you see.
Where did they go?
Well, they went to New York City. Put them on there. Well, they took them to some country, Geneva, somewhere, neutral country, and then from there they took a boat to New York, and they arrived in there Christmas Day. Well, they'd been raped and everything else by these Japs before they were let go out of there. They caught them in a hospital on Bond Road Hospital, you see. But then, when they got back in 42, hell, they didn't know what the hell was going on there. That hadn't started yet, you know what I mean? They'd have stayed there for 45, they'd have knew a lot more.
When you were got back to Victoria,
yeah,
and got off the boat, what happened in Victoria? Did they give you a medical exam?
Well, yeah, they took us to the billets there and told you where you're going to sleep, and then you went over to the paymaster first. He'd give you $100 advance on your pay, you see. Well, it was canteens and all that there, you see. But nobody done nothing. You were packed on your own. And you got a medical, as you were saying there. And then before you left to come home, they give you another one, you see. But you were practically on your own. The cookhouse, the dining room was open 24 hours a day. If you fell hungry, you just had to go in there and eat. But then a lot of them couldn't eat, so, but it was there if you could, you know. And then some of these doctors at Deer Lodge tell me that these fellows killed themselves, they eat themselves to death. I don't know, that could be so, but I got no appetite yet. I'm hungry, I get two or three mouthfuls of food, I'm bloated. Because your stomach's drunk up, that's the trouble, you.
And from Victoria, where did you go from there and
home? Well, we went back to Vancouver by ferry. And then we had to wait around there for about 5 or 6 hours before we caught the train to Winnipeg. Some come back on the CP, I came on the CNN.
Was there any traveling together? Were there large groups or small groups?
I think the biggest bunch ever went together was about 10. There's only four of the bunch I come on, the three other fellows and myself.
And what was the trip home like?
You mean from there to Winnipeg?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we had a berth, we eat in the dining car, met people on the train, wanted to know what it was all about, you know.
And what about interrogation in Victoria? Did they
put
you through some kind of interrogation,
like,
I guess, for security?
No, you just went in front of a doctor, and, well, the doctor, there were hundreds of doctors there, that's your many there. But I mean, he just checked you over, and he thought you were all right. But if he didn't figure you were fit to travel, well, you stayed back, and when they got enough of them, they had a special train bringing them back to Winnipeg. Like at the Philippines, when we got on the boat, there's a lot of them come on the Red Cross boat, you see, brought them back. Well, I wasn't bad enough for that, so I guess they just let me come with the rest of the boys. Hello, on the boat coming home, I took sick, and then they put me there at the hospital on the boat, too. They had nurses and everything. And I laid in there for about a week.
And
But my heart was my trouble. I didn't see a heart patient yet.
Was this caused by...
It's caused by starvation, really. You know, your mind and nothing else don't work if you're starved. It's going to affect some part of you. And I guess that's where it hit me. Although I think the most of these Hong Kong guys, you know, they've been dying fast. I think that's the most trouble now. My wife here, she had a brother there too. You know, he was in their lodge for about 3 weeks. And one weekend, they let him come home on a weekend pass. Well, he just got in the home and he told his wife he didn't feel good. He laid on the circuit. She went out to make him a cup of tea, and when she come back, he was gone. Well, and that's got to be heart trouble. Sure. That's the way most of them go.
Now, when you got back to Winnipeg, what happened after your arrival?
Well, I arrived in Winnipeg, and of course my parents and that were there to meet me. I went to my brother's place. We all had to report to Fort Osborne Barracks the next day, and they give us 30 days leave, you see. Well, that's about all I done, because when your leave was up, you'd go back and get another 30 days. Well, then they said, we're going to give you a discharge, so I went to Fort Osborne Barracks. Well, there was a big line up there a mile long, but not all Hong Kong fellas coming back from Europe too, so they were going through. And this doctor had this thing here, you know, touched their heart. They were going through their leg health, and he struck me, and he said, where do you come from? And I said, Hong Kong. And he said, you sit in the chair. Next thing I know, there's a couple of orderlies with a stretcher coming over there from that hospital in Fort Osborne. So they put me on there and took me in there. I was in there 6 months. Then from there, they transferred me to Deer Lodge. I laid upstairs about 5 months. Because the old heart, you see. Well, I never got out of the Army till 46. April, spring of 46, when I got out. The other fellows, and most of them all got up in 48 and 45.
When, do you recall the date that you left Hong Kong?
The 26th of September, 45. Oh. Yeah.
And after you got your discharge, did you return to work, or were you unable to work?
Yes, I went to work for a little while, worked at Eaton's for a while.
What department?
In the sweeping department, you know, floors at night. There are no elevators run, so you had to go from one stairs up instead of working down, they worked up, and you'd have to climb these damn stairs. I couldn't take it, so I quit. Well, then I got a job in the Marlborough Hotel. I stayed in there about 14 years, I guess.
What was your job then?
A painter. But I had it pretty soft, you know what I mean? My day in the shop mixing up the paint once the guy found out I was a Hong Kong veteran. You know, he was very good to me. Give me a solid job, but I mean, if I had to, lots of times I used to have to get up and help them paint, but I mean, if I had to do that every day, I couldn't have done it. Well, then finally, I went to Deer Lodge one time sick, and this doctor called me, he said, you better quit that job, it's no good for you. So I quit, and that was in 53, 54, I've never done nothing since.
Do you think the government has treated you fairly since the war?
Well, I can't say much about it because I got a fair pension out of it. But a lot of these boys that didn't, I don't think they got paid. In other words, why give me 100% and give some other poor bugger $10 a month? That's not right. And these guys, I know all kinds of these boys are married. You understand? These fellows are married with a family. Well, if they're sick half the time and they can't work, what are they supposed to do? I didn't think that was fair, though.
What about your opinion of the Japanese? Has this been changed at all by the war?
Oh, I think they've come a long way since the war, yeah, sure. Now, I believe there's good Japanese people. I never met any, but there's got to be, eh? There's good and bad in everybody. But I met the worst they had, I guess. I don't know.
But you don't hold any grudge against them or anything?
No. I had no business there, I guess, that's what they say. Maybe we'd have done the same, they come in here. I don't think I could treat them like they treated me. When I got to the Philippines, coming home, we were in tents there. Well, there was thousands of those Japanese there, prisoners of war. They used to work on the roads. Once in a while, they'd sneak around these tents and they'd stick their head in see if they had any butts. Well, hell, I'd sold them a packet of cigarettes. No, they wouldn't do that for me, I know that, but I guess we're not all made that way. No, 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 no.